Hey guys, horror fan here, and welcome back to my podcast on Anchor. Today's horror talk is really disturbing. It's really graphic. If you guys don't want to hear this, I advise you to go to the next episode or my previous horror talk episode, Murder of D.D. Blanchard. This one, it takes it like 10 times worse, honestly. I'm gonna do the horror talk of Murder of Sylvia Likens. I'm not sure if you heard of who was Sylvia Likens, which I never knew at all, but now I heard probably about a couple years ago, I think. I'm not sure. For those of you who do know her, who heard of her, there you go. But for those of you who never heard of her, Sylvia Marie Likens, born January 3, 1949, died October 26, 1965. She was an American teenager who was tortured and murdered by her caregiver, Gertrude Beniziski, many of Beniziski's children, and several of their neighborhood friends. Yeah. This abuse incrementally lasted for 3 months, actually, before Likens died from her extensive injuries and malnourishment on October 26, 1965 in Indianapolis, Indiana. Likens was increasingly neglected, belittled, sexually humiliated, beaten, starved, lacerated, and dehydrated by her tormentors. Her autopsy showed 150 wounds across her body, including several burns, scald marks, and eroded skin. Through intimidation, her younger sister Jenny was occasionally forced to participate in her mistreatment. The official cause of her death was determined to be a homicide caused by a combination of subdural hematoma and shock, complicated by severe malnutrition. So she had that. A subdural hematoma, or SDH, is a type of bleeding in which a collection of blood, usually but not always associated with the brain injury, gathers between the inner layer of the dura mater and the ericoid matter of the meninges surrounding the brain. Gertrude Beniziski, her oldest daughter Paula, her son John, and two neighborhood youths, Coy Hubbard and Richard Hobbs, were all tried and convicted in May 1966 of neglecting, torturing, and murdering Likens. At the defendant's trial, Deputy Prosecutor Leroy New described the case as, quote, the most diabolical case to ever come before a court or jury, end quote. And Gertrude's defense attorney, William C. Erbecker, described Likens as having been subjected to acts of, quote, the degradation that you wouldn't commit on a dog, end quote, before her death. After 8 hours of deliberation, the jury found Gertrude Beniziski guilty of first-degree murder. She was sentenced to life imprisonment, but was released on parole in 1985. What the hell? Paula, her daughter, was found guilty of second-degree murder and was released in 1972. Hobbs, Hubbard, and John, her son and two neighborhood youths, were found guilty of manslaughter and served less than 2 years in the Indiana Reformatory before being granted parole on February 27, 1968. That's bullshit. The torture and murder of Sylvia Likens is widely regarded by Indiana citizens as the worst crime ever committed in their state, and has been described by a senior investigator in the Indianapolis Police Department as the most sadistic case he had ever investigated in the 35 years he served with the Indianapolis Police, which is like so crazy, honestly. So, Sylvia Likens, she was actually 16 when she was killed. Cause of death, subdural hematoma, shock, and malnutrition. Her resting place is in Oak Hill Cemetery at Lebanon, Indiana, United States, known for victim of torture murder. Like I said, it's graphic, so if you guys don't want to listen to this, I advise you to go to my other horror talk episodes, because this one is like, what the actual F, literally. Before I get on to the horror talk of the murder of Sylvia Likens. Don't forget to follow me on Anchor and Spotify. Let's get on to this. Also, guys, I'm not doing this for entertainment purposes. I'm doing this is because it needs to be, she still needs to be remembered, Sylvia Likens. I know this happened in 1965, but she still and still needs to be remembered. And that bitch, she's actually dead, thank you God. So yeah. Alright, but here's a background first. So Gertrude Nadine Van Issisquoi, her maiden name was Van Fossen, born September 19, 1928, died June 16, 1990, thank you God, literally, was born in Indianapolis, Indiana to Hugh Marcus Van Fossen Sr. and Molly Myrtle, maiden name Oakley, both of whom were originally from Illinois and were of American and Dutch descent. Van Issisquoi was the third of six children and her family was working class. On October 5, 1939, Gertrude saw her 50-year-old father die from a sudden heart attack. 6 years later, she dropped out of high school at age 16 to marry 18-year-old John Stephen Benesisqui, born 1926 but died 2007, who was originally from Youngsville, Pennsylvania, and was of Polish ancestry, and with whom she had four children. Although John Benesisqui had a violent temper and occasionally beat his wife, the two would remain together for 10 years prior to their first divorce. Oh. Weird. Following her divorce, Gertrude married a man named Edward Guthrie. This marriage lasted just 3 months before the couple divorced. Shortly thereafter, Gertrude remarried her first husband, oh my god, with whom she had two more children. The couple divorced for the second time in 1963. Weeks after her third divorce, Gertrude began a relationship with a 22-year-old named Dennis Lee Wright, who also physically abused her. She had one child with Wright, Dennis Lee Wright Jr. Shortly after the birth of her son, Wright abandoned Gertrude. Shortly thereafter, Benesisqui filed a paternity suit against Wright for financial support of their child, although Wright seldom contributed to the care of their son. By 1965, Gertrude lived alone with her seven children, Paula, who was 17, Stephanie, she was 15, John, 12, Murray, 11, Shirley, 10, James, 8, and Dennis Lee Wright, only 1 year old. Although 36 years old and 5 feet 6 inches in height, she weighed only 100 pounds and has been described as a, quote, haggard, underweight, asthmatic, end quote, chain smoker suffering from depression due to the stress of three failed marriages, a failed relationship, and a recent miscarriage. In addition to the sporadic checks she received from her first husband, a former Indianapolis policeman upon whom she primarily relied financially to support her children, Gertrude occasionally performed odd jobs for neighbors and acquaintances, such as sewing or cleaning, in order to earn money. Gertrude resided in Indianapolis at 3850 East New York Street, where the monthly rent was actually $55. Well, I mean, it was back in the days, obviously, so, like, not surprising, so, obviously. Now, Sylvia Likens. She was the third of five children born to carnival workers. Ooh, Lester Cecil Likens, born 1926 but died 2013, and his wife Elizabeth Betty Francis, maiden name Grimes, born 1927, died 1998. She was born between two sets of fraternal twins, Daniel and Diana, 2 years older than her, and Benny and Jenny, 1 year younger. Jenny suffered from polio, causing one of her legs to be weaker than the other. She was afflicted with a notable limp and had to wear a steel brace on one leg. Lester and Elizabeth's marriage was unstable. They often sold candy, beer, and soda at the carnival stands. Around Indiana throughout the summer, moving frequently and regularly experiencing severe financial difficulties. The Likens' sons regularly traveled with them in order to assist with their job, but Sylvia and Jenny were discouraged from doing the same out of concern for their safety and education. As a result, both sisters frequently stayed with their relatives, often the grandmother. In her teenage years, Sylvia Likens occasionally earned spending money by babysitting, running errands, or performing ironing chores for friends and neighbors, often giving her mother part of her earnings. Aw, she has been described as a friendly, confident, and lively girl with long, wavy, light brown hair extending below her shoulders, and was known as Cookie to her friends. Oh, okay, that's nice. Although exuberant, Likens always kept her mouth closed when smiling due to a missing front tooth, which she lost while roughhousing with one of her brothers during a childhood game. She was also fond of music, particularly the Beatles, and was notably protective of her markedly more timid and insecure younger sister, Jenny. Aww. On several occasions, the two sisters would visit a local skating rink where Sylvia would help Jenny skate by holding her hands while Jenny skated on her unaffected foot. Then, July 1965. So, by June 1965, Sylvia and Jenny reunited with her parents in Indianapolis, but on July 3rd, their mother was arrested and subsequently jailed for shoplifting. Shortly thereafter, Lester Likens arranged for his daughters to board with Gertrude, the mother of two girls with whom the sisters had recently become acquainted while studying at Arsenal Technical High School, Paula and Stephanie. At the time of this boarding agreement, Gertrude assured Lester she would care for her for his daughters until his return as if they were her own children. She was wrong. Shortly after the July 4th holiday, the sisters moved into 3850 East New York Street in order for their father and later their mother to travel to the East Coast with the carnival, with the understanding that Gertrude would receive weekly boarding fees of $20 to care for their daughters until they return to collect Sylvia and Jenny in November of that year. Wait, in November? So wait, basically they were gone for like, wait, August. 4 months? What the hell? Oh my God, it's crazy. During the initial weeks in which Sylvia and Jenny resided at the Benisisqui household, the sisters were subjected to very little discipline or abuse. Likens regularly sang along to pop records with Stephanie, and she willingly participated in housework at the Benisisqui residence. Both girls also regularly attended Sunday school with the with the Benisisqui children, with the pastor commending Sylvia's piety. It's a virtue which may include religious devotion or spirituality. I see. Then the abuse came. That's not good. Although Lester had agreed to pay Gertrude $20 a week in exchange for the care of his daughters, after approximately 2 weeks, these payments failed to constantly arrive upon the prearranged dates, occasionally arriving 1 or 2 days late. In response, Gertrude began venting her frustration at this fact upon the sisters by beating their bare buttocks with various instruments, such as a 1/4 inch thick paddle, making statements such as, quote, "Well, I took care of you, sorry, well, I took care of you two little bitches for a week for nothing," end quote. So basically, she just started to beat them just because she didn't get paid. Okay, how about this? You know what? If she was still alive, I could literally beat her ass as well. I could literally do that. So yeah. On one occasion in late August, both girls were beaten approximately 15 times on the back with a aforementioned paddle after Paula had accused the sisters of eating too much food at a church supper the household children had attended. Are you kidding me? Wow. By mid-August, Gertrude had begun to focus her abuse almost exclusively upon Sylvia, with her primary motivation likely being jealousy of the girl's youth, appearance, respectability, and potential. So that's like the second reason. According to the subsequent trial testimony, this abuse was initially inflicted upon Sylvia after she and Jenny had returned to the Benisisqui residence from Arsenal Technical High School, as well as on weekends. This initial abuse included subjecting Likens to beatings and starvation, forcing her to eat leftovers or spoiled food out of garbage cans. On one occasion, Likens was accused of stealing candy she had actually purchased. Really? Wow. Okay. On one occasion in late August, Likens was subjected to humiliation when when she claimed to have a boyfriend in Long Beach, whom she had met in the spring of 1965 when her family lived in California. In response, Gertrude asked if Sylvia had, quote, ever done anything with a boy, end quote, to which Likens, unsure of her meaning, replied, quote, I guess so, end quote, and explained that she had gone skating with boys there and had once gone to the park on the beach with them. Continuing the conversation with Jenny and Stephanie, Sylvia mentioned that she had once laid under the covers with her boyfriend. Upon hearing this, Gertrude asked, quote, why did you do that, Sylvia, end quote. Likens replied, quote, I don't know, end quote, and shrugged. Several days later, Gertrude returned to the subject with Likens, telling her, quote, you're certainly getting big in the stomach, Sylvia. It looks like you're going to have a baby, end quote. Likens thought Gertrude was kidding with her and said, quote, yeah, it sure is getting big. I'm just going to have to go on a diet, end quote. Gertrude then informed her and the other girls in the house that whenever they, quote, did something, end quote, with a boy, they would be sure to have a baby. She then kicked Likens in the genitals. Paula herself, 3 months pregnant. Oh my gosh. Oh, so Paula was also pregnant. That's like not surprising. And also jealous of Likens' physical appearance. Okay, that's like not surprising, but really, wow. So basically, not only Gertrude was jealous of Likens, her own daughter was jealous of Likens. That's like so stupid. Then participated in attacking Likens, knocking her off her chair and onto the kitchen floor, shouting, quote, you ain't fit to sit in a chair, end quote. On another occasion, as the family ate supper, Gertrude, Paula, and a neighborhood boy named Randy Gordon Leper force-fed Likens a hot dog overloaded with condiments, including mustard, ketchup, and spices. Likens result sorry vomited as a result and was later forced to consume what she had regurgitated. In what was Likens' only act of retaliation, she is alleged to have spread a rumor at Arsenal Technical High School that Stephanie and Paula were prostitutes because she was upset with the household singing singling her out for similar accusations. Oh, well, that's surprise. That's like, wow, good job, dude. But then it got worse. While at school, Stephanie was jokingly prostitute wait propositioned by a boy who told her that Likens had started this rumor about her. Upon returning home that day, Stephanie questioned Likens about the rumor, and she admitted to starting it. Stephanie punched her in response, but Sylvia apologized to her in tears, and Stephanie then also began to cry. However, when Stephanie's boyfriend, 15-year-old Coy Randolph Hubbard, wait, hold up. I'm sorry, wait, Coy Hubbard? Wait, isn't that the neighborhood youths? Wait, hold the frick up, 1 second. That's. Wow, Coy Hubbard was Stephanie's boyfriend. What the hell? I did not know that. That's crazy. That's like fucked up, seriously. Coy Randolph Hubbard heard of the rumor. He brutally attacked Sylvia, slapping her, banging her head against the wall, and flipping her backwards onto the floor. When Gertrude found out, she used a paddle to beat Sylvia. Wow. On another occasion, Paula beat Likens about the face with such force that she broke her own wrist, having primarily focused her blows upon Sylvia's teeth and knives. Later, Paula used a cast on her wrist to further beat Sylvia. Gertrude repeatedly falsely accused Sylvia of promiscuity and of engaging in prostitution, ranting about the filthiness of prostitution and women in general. Gertrude would later occasionally force Jenny to strike her own sister, beating Jenny if she did not comply. Oh, man. Oh, well, okay. Now it gets like 10 times worse. Coy and several of his classmates frequently visited the Benisesqui residence to both physically and verbally torment Sylvia, often collaborating with with Gertrude and her children herself, with Gertrude's children and Gertrude herself. With Gertrude's active encouragement, these neighborhood children routinely beat Sylvia, sometimes using her as a practice dummy in violent judo sessions, lacerating her body, burning her skin with lit cigarettes in excess of 100 times, and severely injuring her genitals. To entertain Gertrude and her teenage accomplices, Sylvia was forced at one point to strip naked in the family living room and I'm not sure if I want to read this, but this is so fucked up. But fuck it, like I said, guys, it's really graphic. In the living, at one point to strip naked in the family living room and masturbate with a glass Pepsi Cola bottle in her in their presence, with Gertrude stating to all present that this act of humiliation was for Sylvia to quote prove to Jenny what kind of a girl you are end quote. Gertrude eventually forbade Sylvia from attending school after she confessed to having stolen a gym suit from the school due to Gertrude having refused to purchase for the clothing for her. For this act of theft, Gertrude whipped Sylvia with a 3-inch wide police belt. Gertrude then switched her conversation to the evils of premarital sex before repeatedly kicking Sylvia in the genitals as Stephanie rallied to Lycan's defense, shouting, quote, she didn't do anything, end quote. Oh, that's well, so she defended her. That's finally. But Gertrude then burned Sylvia's fingertips with matches before further whipping her. A few days later, Gertrude repeatedly whipped Jenny with the police belt after she reportedly stole a single tennis shoe from the school to wear on her strong foot. That's seriously fucked up. Now the turmoil. The Lycan siblings were fearful of notifying either family members or adults after school of the increasing. One second. Increasing incidents of abuse and neglect they were enduring, as both were afraid that doing so would only worsen their situation. Oh my God. Jenny, in particular, struggled against the urge to notify family members as she had been threatened by Gertrude that she would herself be abused and tortured to the same degree as her sister if she did so. Jenny was also subjected to bullying by girls in her neighborhood, in addition to occasionally being ridiculed or beaten whenever she alluded to Sylvia's situation. In July and August, both Lester and Elizabeth Likens finally would occasionally return to Indianapolis to revisit their daughters whenever their travel schedule afforded them the opportunity. The last occasion Lester and Elizabeth visited their daughters was on October 5. On this occasion, neither girl exhibited any visible sign of distress about their mistreatments to their parents. This was likely because both were in the presence of Gertrude and her children. Almost immediately after Lester and Elizabeth had left the Benisisqui household on their final visit, Gertrude turned to face Sylvia and stated, quote, and stated, quote, what are you going to do now, Sylvia? Now they're gone, end quote. On one occasion in September, the girls encountered their older sister, Diana Shoemaker, at a local park. Both Jenny and Sylvia informed Diana about the abuse they were enduring at the hands of their caregiver, adding that Sylvia was being specifically targeted for physical abuse and almost always for things she had neither said nor done. Neither sister m mentioned the actual address where they resided and initially, Diana believed that her sisters must have been exaggerating their claims regarding the scope of their mistreatment. Several weeks prior to this, Sylvia and Jenny had encountered Diana in the same park while in the company of 11-year-old Marie Benazizqui, and Sylvia had been given a sandwich to eat when she mentioned to her sister that she was hungry. Sylvia remained silent about the matter, although Marie revealed this fact to her family in late September. Oh man. In response, Gertrude accused Sylvia of engaging in gluttony or gluttony. It means overindulgence and overconsumption of food, drink, or wealth items, particularly as status symbols. before she and Paula choked and bludgeoned her. Oh my God. The pair then subjected Sylvia to a scalding bath in order to, quote, cleanse her of sin, end quote, with Gertrude grabbing Sylvia's hair and repeatedly banging her head against the bath to revive her whenever she fainted. Shortly after this incident, the father of a neighborhood boy named Michael John Moreau phoned Arsenal Technical High School to anonymously report that a girl with open sores across her entire body was living at the Benesisqui household. Thank God, finally. It's a wound that is a rapid onset of injury that involves lacerated or punctured skin. As Likens had not attended school for several days, a school nurse visited East New York Street to investigate these claims. Gertrude claimed to the nurse that Sylvia had run away from her home the previous week and that she was unaware of her actual whereabouts, adding that Sylvia was, quote, out of control, end quote, and that her open sores were a result of Sylvia's refusal to maintain decent personal hygiene. Gertrude further claimed that Sylvia was a bad influence on both her own children and her sister. The school made no further investigations concerning Sylvia's welfare. Are you kidding me? What, you bitch? The immediate neighbors of the Benesisqui family were a middle-aged couple named Raymond and Phyllis Vermillion. Both initially viewed Gertrude as an ideal caregiver for the Likens sisters, and both had visited the Benesisqui residence on two occasions while the girls had been under Gertrude's care. On both occasions, however, the Vermillions witnessed Paula physically abusing Sylvia, who on both occasions had a black eye, and openly boasting about her mistreatment of the child to them. Upon their second visit to the Benesisqui household, both observed Likens to appear extremely meek and somewhat zombified in nature. Nevertheless, the Vermillions never reported Likens' evident mistreatment to the authorities. Wow. On or about October 1st, Diana discovered that her sisters were at the Benesisqui residence. She visited the property in an attempt to initiate regular contact. Gertrude, however, refused to allow Diana entry to the property, stating that she had, quote, received permission, end quote, from their parents not to allow either of the girls to see her. She then ordered Diana to leave the property. Approximately 2 weeks later, Diana encountered Jenny by chance close to the home and inquired as to Sylvia's welfare. She was informed, quote, I can't tell you or I'll get into trouble, end quote. Oh man. So Jenny couldn't say it because she was afraid of her own of her life, Sylvia's life, and also of her being abused by Gertrude. But then it became worse, like so worse. Escalation. Due to the increase in the frequency and brutality of the torture and mistreatment Sylvia was subjected to, she gradually became incontinent. It means urinary incontinence. Oh, it's like any uncontrolled leakage of urine. That's not good. She was denied any access to the bathroom, being forced to wet herself as a form of punishment for her incontinencies. On October 6th, Gertrude threw Sylvia into the basement and tied her up. Here, Sylvia was often kept naked, rarely fed, and frequently deprived of water. Occasionally, she was tied to the railing of the basement stairs with her feet barely touching the ground. I'm going to do part two. 1 second. This is so fucked up. Seriously.